Got it. Okay. So November, welcome to November. It's wintertime. Oh my goodness. Time to hunker down and eat lots of fattening foods. At least that's what I'm doing. Hi. You guys are starting to submit more questions, and I'm really excited about that because some of your questions, well, all of your questions are really, really intriguing for me. And a lot of them make me go inside and try to figure out, based on what I know, the most appropriate, heartfelt answer that I come up with, especially if they're about emotions. And there were three questions that were submitted. The first one is about anger this month. The second one is about the quote from Dune about fear that people are always sending me and asking me about. I'm finally going to address that. The third is about negative self-talk that just goes round and round in your mind. Now, the best way to approach this call is even if these weren't your questions, keep your mind open, keep your curiosity flowing, like keep your cup open and empty and upright. Like we all experience negative self-talk. We all experience anger. We all are curious about fear. Otherwise, you wouldn't have signed up for these, or be a client of mine. Now, it may not always be obvious how these certainly negative self-talk shows up for you. It might be covert or show up in redirected ways. It might show up as talking bad about other people instead of talking bad about your own self within yourself. This is a way that you don't have to deal with it on your own by just projecting it on other people. So we're going to explore fear, anger, and negative self-talk. Let's begin. Now, the first question was actually in the form of two questions. And this was written to me about from somebody who was just really pissed off and afraid. Those were his words, not mine. Now, I want you to remember those words. He says he's just really pissed off and afraid all the time. The first question that he asked me was, are there layers to this? And the answer is yes, there are layers. First of all, some people argue that anger isn't even its own thing. It's just fear, like a fight version of fear. Like there's fight, flight, and flee. Like what we typically associate with fear is our flight response, where fight, which is anger, which is problem-solving energy, which looks like the mama bear rearing up with the claws. That's the analogy I always use. That's really what anger is just nothing more than fear in fight mode. Now, that's good. That's interesting. But even more interesting is the person who asked this question didn't say, I feel anger and fear. He said, and I'm always really listening to people's language. His exact words were, I'm really pissed and scared, which is very different from saying, I feel anger and fear. Now, anger and fear are nouns. They are things that you can look at and experience. Like a noun is something that you can hold, like a clock or witness, like a car. And it's separate from you, which is why I love to do the voice dialogue because there's you, subject, and fear, object. It's a noun. Whereas being pissed or scared, and I love that this question was asked because I needed to get clear on this anyway. These are adjectives. Pissed and scared are adjectives. Pissed is the state of being the noun. Pissed is the state of being the anger. And scared is an adjective. It's a state of being the fear. So breaking apart the question, notice there's no subject object. There's no you feeling fear. Instead, when you feel rage, right? You become the anger, you become the emotion, or rather, the emotion becomes you. It takes over your entire being. Sorry, I have something in my eye. So, to experience the difference, then, I want everyone to kind of get into a stance where your feet are on the ground and your back is upright, like you're going to be meditating. And this is a form of meditation. I just want you to drop in and all of you guys have done enough voice dialogue that you can just drop in really quickly in just one isolated experience. I want you to just sit and say to yourself and have the experience of, I feel fear. So just sit and say, I feel fear. Do that for about 15 seconds. I feel fear. Now, sit and have the experience of, I am scared. It's not that you feel scared, you are scared. So sit and say that to yourself, I am scared. Now sit and have the experience of, I feel anger. Now feel or experience, I guess, the words, I am pissed. Or even, I am angry. So back to the question, like, what exactly has happened that this person shifted from feeling anger to being anger or being pissed? When the noun for you, like these emotions, become the adjective and these emotions have taken over your life, that's usually a sign that you're in resistance to the emotion or repressing it. It's not flowing through your body like I talk about in 10 to 90 seconds and then it's gone once the moment's gone. Your hose is kinked and next thing you know, you become marinated in it. And especially, you know that this is true if you feel the emotion a lot. And as for what it is, though, fear or anger or both, this brings me to your second question. And actually, the person that asked this is probably going to listen to the recording later. He's not on the call. So we're going to, I want, as we're going through this, if anybody that is on the call resonates with these questions, that I'm going to put somebody in the hot seat pretty soon. And if you think that it might be you, just be prepared to raise your hand in a little bit. Now, the second question that he asked was, here it is. Does one have to feel rage fully before one gets to feeling and acknowledging fear stored in the body? He's asking if, you know, like the four steps, do you have to feel your rage fully? So he didn't say, do you have to feel your anger? He said, do you have to feel your rage fully? And I'm saying not necessarily, for two reasons. First of all, because we're talking rage and not just anger, you should never do that to your body nor to your soul. And the reason why is because if it's rage, then it's all often more than likely repressed fear and repressed anger. So you're not just feeling fear or anger. You're feeling, if you were to feel it fully, you're feeling repressed fear or repressed anger. And it's not going to go well. You're going to just get confused and lost because you haven't dealt with the resistance of the repression yet. You know, next thing you know, people are like, oh, she just wants me to feel my rage, right? And next thing you know, your fists are clenched and your face is red and it'll become externally directed. And next thing you know, you're punching walls and screaming at people and all of that. Now, there are some spiritual practice or personal growth practices that do this in a safe way. You know, you've heard about the punching pillows. And I've definitely done that. Raise your hand if you've done that. The practice where you think about something that was upsetting to you as a child, and then you go and with the support of people, loving people around you, you just cry and scream and yell and rage and hit your face in the pillows and punch the pillows. Now, that kind of practice, very, very popular, feels great that day. And you leave the retreat feeling super cleansed and free. But you haven't dealt with the resistance. So half a second later, it builds up again and you're right back. So I don't think that it's healthy to just feel it and express it like that, because it can too often hurt your body also. More often, people, like, they scream and they hurt their hands and they, you know, they just, they just feel really exhausted afterwards because it's unhealthy for your body. And more often than not, you actually haven't released anything. And the reason maybe why you feel so good after these workshops is you just feel tired. And you feel so good because you're no longer pounding on pillows in a state of rage, right? That moment is past. Plus, you're surrounded by a lot of love and support. And so that's always really wonderful. But here's the second and main reason why you shouldn't feel rage or scared fully. Because too often what you're dealing with may seem like one thing, you know, like with the pillow pounding thing, usually it gets started by, I'm so angry at my ex-wife, or I have such anger towards my upbringing or my dad or the kids on the playground or whatever it is. It may feel like one thing when really it's another thing entirely. Like, for example, if you have a lot of rage at your father, well, if your father didn't deal with his anger either, you may be feeling his rage on his behalf. I'm going to say that again because it's really profound. If a person in your life is repressing their emotions and they're not dealing with their emotions, like dad's never dealt with his fear or anger, which most of our dads haven't because they came from the generation where that was just really explicitly part of life, then in this generation, you may be feeling not just your anger and fear, but also feeling dad's anger and fear on his behalf for him. Or maybe you could be feeling fear of dad, and that's how your rage is coming out, you know, because it makes you feel more powerful. And especially if your dad is no longer alive, like if he's no longer or not even in your life, like you've maybe blocked him out of your life, it could just be repressed fear in general. Or maybe you're feeling resistance to, you know, not only something internally, but something externally. Or we've talked about core values before, which triggers your core fears, which trigger your core wound, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Your core wound could be triggered. So you may just feel like you have anger at your father. But what I'm saying is it might be something completely different entirely. So what do you do instead? Well, for one, don't try to figure it out because you'll drive yourself nuts. Like, where does it come from? What is it? You know, you can get lost in that process and make a therapist very rich. And the second you think it's one thing, it just winds up being another thing entirely. The more I learn about emotions, the more I realize that we're really wasting our time trying to figure out where they come from. And usually we're just trying to figure out where they come from as a way to control and get rid of them. So just know this, if we are talking rage is often coming from a, like, you blaming, you know, another person place, like you're a victim. So there's a lot of blame and victim with rage. No one ever just feels rage unless it's directed at another person or directed at a situation. Which is why someone, when they're in a rage, all their sentences start with you. Like, you are causing these problems in my life. You know, and it could be a situation too, but more often it's another person. And what you're doing is you're blaming your emotions on another person. So what I'm saying is that you don't want to feel your rage fully in order to get rid of it. Because, you know, I guess if you're going to understand anything, it's about understanding that rage is, rage certainly, we'll just leave it at that, is always associated with blame and feeling like a victim. Which, backing up, is the fight version of fear. And if you don't want to feel fear, certainly people with rage issues don't want to be scared because it makes them feel weak. It makes them feel like a victim. So you feel anger instead as a way to get your power back. But it doesn't turn into rage unless you repress it. Repress the anger and your fear over time. And next thing you know, it builds up and explodes as rage. Like, you kink the hose, it builds up, boom. It's kind of like fear. When you kink the hose, it eventually builds up until it explodes out the cracks in the form of a panic attack. So basically what fear is to panic attacks, anger is to a rage attack. You know, rage is the anger equivalent of a panic attack that comes from a kinked hose. So that's all you really need to understand. You don't need to know where it comes from. Just you know, life is scary and or life has a lot of fear, life has a lot of anger involved, like people piss you off, right? So we must deal with it in the same way then as a panic attack. You know, we must deal with rage in the same way as a panic attack. And if you have a panic attack, you don't want to, when you're having it, feel your panic. You want to, sit with it, the noun of it. You don't want to let it take over, not the adjective of it, just to get through the adjective moment. Then when you can, when you're calmed down and you can start a fear as a noun practice again, you know, it's the four steps that many of you are familiar with. It's the same with a rage attack. You just have to get through it first. And then when you're calmed down, then you start to do the four steps and see your fear, your anger as a noun, you know, a subject object practice. If you are subject and the dad or your wife who's pissing you off or the traffic, that's not the object. You know, this has nothing to do with anything else or anyone else. The object, the noun, is your anger, your fear. So to show you what this means, who wants to be in the hot seat? Any volunteers? Just need one. And if nobody is brave enough to be a volunteer, then I can volunteer, or we can do something else.
Kristen, it's Liz. If nobody wants to do it, I will.
Okay. She's willing to take a risk.
So would you like me to tell you something I'm angry about or something I'm afraid of?
Let's do something that you're angry about, because let me get a piece of paper in this office of mine. So I was hoping the person that submitted the question would be on the call. And but I don't want you to tell me a long story about it. Just give me a couple sentences.
Okay. My husband has two grown sons, and one of them is doing great and it acts like an adult. They're both in their 30s. The other has never been able to support himself or manage his own life. And it makes me angry when my husband and his ex let Andrew slide. So I'm sort of like the evil stepmother because I say things to make him confront what he's doing, and sometimes it's good, but not always.
One question. What is your judgment of Andrew, is his name? What do you think that he needs to learn how to be or do?
Well, he has a lot of ADHD, which I guess led to some of this, but I feel he needs more confidence. So I actually did get him involved with a really upbeat life coach for a while.
Let me just stop you there, because we have a lot to cover tonight, and I want to make sure that we get to the core of this. Because this, a lot of the times the story doesn't matter, like I said, because it just, the only thing that matters is your emotion tied with it.
Okay.
He's lazy as fuck. That's what I'm looking for. What's the opposite of lazy?
Industrious.
Industrious. All right.
Maybe confident.
And confident?
Yes.
All right. And that, you've said the word confidence twice. So this is interesting. Liz, were you on the call about core values a few months ago?
I only missed one call, and it was over the summer, like in July.
Okay. And those core values...
I thought you said poor values. No. Yes, I was on that call.
Okay. Well, my guess is that we're going to reverse engineer, because there's two things that we can do here. We could just have you feel your emotions in the four steps, but the more that I look into core values, the more that I realize that people's fears, and AKA their subsequent anger, comes from their core values being triggered. So you may have as your top two core values, industrious and confidence. And so if you reverse engineer an incident, like if you're feeling intense emotion, fear or anger, rage or scared, I realize now what I'm trying to say is that it all comes back to core values. And if you reverse engineer an incident or something that upsets you and bring in your core values, you can see this. Mm-hmm. So if your core value is being industrious and having confidence, then you come into contact with Andrew and your core value is just going to get really triggered when you see him not being something that you value most in the world. And then if your husband and his ex-wife just kind of give him a bye and don't try to help him be more industrious or confident, which is something that you value so much you can't believe that it doesn't matter to them, then you're going to, it's going to trigger your greatest fear. And we could pick this apart, but it's also going to trigger your rage, which is kind of more what we're talking about. So let's stick with that. And the next thing you know, you're going to feel like a victim. You're going to be blamed in a state of blame. And, you know, you weren't the one that wrote the question, and you're not complaining about feeling rage. So I'm kind of imagining if this was making you enraged, where that comes from. It, like, you feel powerless because nobody's listening to you. It's triggering your core value, which is you not having it actualized. Can you mute yourself a little bit? It's really super noisy. Yeah, thank you. And then it gets projected externally, and you start saying you sentences and start acting weird. And next thing you know, you're triggering the core wound in your husband and his ex-wife, which are also tied to their core values. And next thing you know, there's a cycle that if includes repression, right, or blaming the emotion on another person, which is you, I don't want to deal with my emotions, you deal with it, you're the one that's causing it, like blaming, you know, not taking ownership. And then if you do that for enough weeks or months or years, you know, and then you are resisting your emotions, because you don't like how you feel, and you feel like they're making you feel this way, right? It's like they're making you be this person that you don't want to be. Maybe then not today, because whatever you resist persists, eventually it can tip over the edge and turn into rage. And next thing you know, you see any kind of coddling of Andrew that isn't helping him be more industrious or confident, which is what you value, you can go from zero to dangerous in half a second. So I don't know if that resonates with you. Like I said, this was not your question, but when you have this kind of domino effect that disintegrates, you have two choices. The first choice is you can learn how to identify your core values, and then from there, identify your core wound and your core fear, which we'll go over soon in the third question, and then communicate that with your husband and his ex-wife. That's, you know, and that's how you kind of nip it at the very bud. But the other thing is we also have the four steps. And so I want us to do it here, and we'll do it as a group. And Liz, in particular, I'll have you do it. But what you do in those moments is you go find a quiet place when you're feeling enraged at husband and ex-wife, and give yourself some love. The four steps is a love practice. And the four steps is a way to not have to figure out what it is that's making you upset, but actually go back and owning your emotions And more often than not, it's some form of resistance. It's resistance to their core values. It's resistance to Andrew not having your core values. It's resistance to your fear that gets triggered that your core values are not being recognized or taught to somebody else and therefore also being honored in you, and on and on. You want to do that now?
Sure. I'll just say, I think my core values are also hedonism and questioning, but this is giving me some good things to look at.
Hedonism and questioning. Okay. I mean, I could probably spin this like questioning, like why isn't the husband and the ex-wife questioning the way that they're treating this Andrew with his ADHD in order to be a functioning human? You know, maybe they're just fixed in one place. And it's also a matter of getting to know what their core values are too. But let's just bookmark that for now, because this is a conversation about rage. Why don't we all do this together? And maybe not just you, Liz. But if anybody has any questions, unmute yourself or put something in the chat while we're going through this together. But I want to just go through the four steps regarding anger. In about 2 minutes. We'll do it for 2 minutes. So first of all, sit upright, straight back, feet on the floor. This is a very holy self-love experience. And step one, acknowledge that it's normal and natural to feel anger. It's especially normal and natural to feel anger if your core values, you're not witnessing them in other people. They matter so much to you. Maybe you've been in resistance to the emotions. Maybe you've been in resistance to somebody else's core values. Just acknowledge whatever it is that you want to acknowledge as normal and natural right now. It's just part of life. Step two, we're now going to leave our minds behind and we're going to get into our bodies. And this is going to really simplify things, make it so that it's not about trying to figure out anything anymore. This is about ownership of your own emotions, irregardless of where they come from or whether they were triggered by another person or a situation. So just find the part of you that feels angry. Notice where it is, maybe touch that part of your body. We don't even need to know what it is that we're angry about, but if you want to, you can just do a half sentence like, I'm angry at such and such person. Notice how strong is it? Maybe not that strong right now because we're on a call. Step three, are you in resistance to it? Do you wish it weren't so? Have you been ignoring it, not even noticing that it's there? Have you been blaming it on somebody else? Have you been distracting yourself so that you don't have to feel it? These are all forms of resistance. Are you in your head all the time trying to figure out what the problem is as a way to not have to feel the emotion in your body? That's probably the biggest form of resistance I see. If so, just bow to your resistance. Acknowledge it's normal and natural. Spend some time just resisting it. Blaming all you want. Being in your head all you want. Having the thought, I don't want to feel this. How dare they destroy the calm of my day by being such asses? Just allow yourself whatever thoughts or whatever resistance to feeling this unpleasant emotion that you want. Notice the resistance feels pretty awful too. Maybe you even resist the resistance. Sit with it and feel it, whatever your resistance is. And then the fourth step is now just feel your anger. It's a noun. It's like you're feeling it. It's not you. You're not it. You have a relationship with it. Just feel it. Give it some breath, which is another way of saying give it some love. Give it a hug. It's yours. It lives within you. Can you be intimate with it? Notice if it's just anger or if it's rage. What is it? Whatever it is, just feel it. Notice it takes you out of your head to identify what it is. Does anybody have any questions? Dave, I live in resistance, distraction. That's interesting. Yeah? Distracting ourselves from feeling our feelings. I'm going to move on to the second question, unless anybody has anything burning that they want to ask. So just in conclusion to the answer of that question, no, you don't want to sit in the rage, but you do want to have an anger practice. A noun anger practice, so it doesn't turn into an adjective. All right, moving on. The Dune quote. So I'm going to bring it up. Frank Herbert wrote the book Dune. This is a very famous quote. It's probably one of the most famous quotes on fear. And Frank Herbert, very smart guy, right? He wrote, "I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass through me, over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. And where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain." Now, people have been asking me about this quote for years, and I've never liked it. This guy, though, he's obviously a genius. And so we assume that he knows what's what pretty much about everything. You know, he's a genius sci-fi writer. I haven't read his book, but I saw the movie. And so we want to think that he's a genius about everything and that this is some sort of amazing wisdom about fear. But I hate this quote for three reasons. And the first reason is that this quote contradicts itself. Like it says, "I must not fear, and I will face my fear," in the same quote. Now, which is it? You guys know that I love to see fear as a person. And if I say, okay, to fear, "I must not have you in my life, but I will," and then not "but I will face you," it's just "I must not fear, I will face you." So if he had said "but," I think that it would have made more sense, but "I must not fear, I will face my fear." It kind of feels like it has to be one or the other. And then the second one is that I don't like about, the second reason why I don't like it is because he said, "I will permit it." And right there, it's like it's suggesting that we have some sort of control over our fear. Like, I'll allow it. Like, it's a big joke in our culture right now that we say, "Oh, I'll allow it," because it's such a narcissist thing to say about another person. Like, "I'll allow you to have more, a second dessert." You know, "I will permit it." So I will permit it to pass through me is specifically what he says. I am not a big fan of that kind of controlling language when it comes to fear. And the third reason why I don't like this quote is the sentence that I spent so much time trying to figure out what the heck he's talking about is, "Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing." Now, either this doesn't make any sense at all, "Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing, only I will remain." Or it's so deep in a Zen koan kind of way that I just don't get it. So I looked it up. I looked it up on the internet. Like, what is everybody's interpretation about this? And a lot of people had a lot of opinions about that. And most people, their opinions just suggest that the quote is entirely about how we need to fight fear and we need to get rid of fear. So this leads me, you know, people that are really smart all said this. This leads me to conclude that no matter how you look at it, this guy is painting a negative picture of fear. And you know how I feel about that. So while I think he's a genius at writing science fiction, which I will never be, he is no expert on fear. So, any questions?
Kristen, this is Jeff. I was the one who gave you the quote. I actually did a lot of thinking about it, and I think the reason we can't understand it is that it's a lie designed to confuse a potential warrior, in the sense that it's given by a space witch, part of this cult, to a young warrior as a test. And there's a tradition in a number of different warrior cultures, like Vikings, like suicide bombers, to give them a confusing message, you know, like, oh, you'll go to an honored place, you'll get the 72 virgins and Valhalla or paradise. And somehow, this may not be true. This may just be some indoctrination for a young warrior to get them to go ahead and put themselves at risk by confusing them about what fear is. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I kept saying, Herbert's smart enough to know that there are all these contradictions in it. You know, it's not like it's logical at all. So it seems to me that it may be some kind of lie, some kind of indoctrination to confuse a young warrior, just like, because this stuff is all the DNA of Star Wars and Star Trek and all of that stuff, because it was early 60s. So when you try and train a Jedi in certain things, the dark side of the Force or the light side of the Force, there are lies in that. The person training them gives them some logical confusion to let them go and fight, even though as a human being, they would normally feel fear. So that was my take on it after having thought about that it has no meaning. It's just meant to confuse.
Yeah, and I can see that that would work. I like that. Because people are really confused by fear. You know, it's like having just been the victim of gaslighting, you know, people can instill fear on you very easily. That, you know, like I didn't have certain kind of fears or any kind of, and we're going to talk about next, core wounds. And all of a sudden, well, I did, but it was so dormant. And next thing you know, it just triggered it. And where there's core wound, there's core fear as well. And so like we can so easily hijack each other by instilling fear on each other through gaslighting, for example, which I think is what you're describing. I mean, I obviously need to read the book before I make any comments, but just as that quote is a standalone, fear is very simple, but we find it extremely confusing because of our cultural norms and the way that it's used. Like I would say that the Taliban uses fear as a weapon to Americans because we don't know what to do with our fear except repress it. And I don't think that they're clever enough to know that that's what they're doing, but they, you know, it's not that fear is a weapon. Our confusion about fear and what to do about it is the weapon. And it's like dropping like a snake, you know, you drop a snake into a birthday party and people don't know what to do. Like, what kind of snake is it? Oh my God. Like, and we're running around helter skelter. But in our culture, if we were raised to believe that snakes are wonderful, then we'd be like, oh, how nice, right? But we don't know what to do about it in our culture. And so I think that what you're saying makes sense. But, and I could talk about this longer, but I want to move on because we have a little bit over 20 minutes left, and what we're going to do next is really interesting. But is anybody, do you have anything else that you're dying to say about this quote for now? Okay. Another question was submitted, and here it is. I wanted to ask you about rumination and how to stop or slow down that cycle. Lately, I fixate on relationships and how I am not enough. Remember that, I am not enough. I try to work through it, but the thoughts will not stop. It is exhausting. This is huge. I am not enough. I try to work through it, but the thoughts won't stop. It's exhausting. Now, I've only realized this in the last few weeks. And so I'm so excited about this, these realizations, because it's so tied with fear, which is what I'm passionate about. In our lives, and not just the person that is asking the question, I want you guys to all really pay attention to what I'm going to say next, because this is going to change everything for you when it comes to negative self-talk. Now, we've all had a moment in our lives where we realize that there's something wrong with us, or there's something wrong with me, right? Usually happens when we're younger. It might just be an incident that happens once and never gets repeated, but it could be something that also turns round and round. If it happens once and never gets repeated, usually it goes covert and it's still there, but it's just showing up in a different way. For other people, it's really, really on the surface, and we become very, very aware of this whole there's something wrong with me feeling. It repeats, especially if we're in a bad relationship, or if we're taking a risk, or if we have some sort of bomb dropped on us that has really uprooted our core values or our comfort. So what is that all about? Having this negative self-talk. And I always laugh, or rather I cry, at how we humans can't seem to leave anything that's painful alone. Like, remember when you were a kid and you had a loose tooth and you just couldn't stop wiggling it? Like, what was that all about, right? It's like the painful sight is almost irresistible. Question is, why is pain almost irresistible? Well, I'll tell you why. And it ties in with core values. I mean, the more I write this book about core values, the more I'm just blown away by this is just such a huge piece of the puzzle. Because tied in with your core values, now you also have, drum roll please, your core wound. Now, I am going to outline the core wounds that I most commonly see. So I want you to get out a pen, and I will also put these down in the subscriber page when we're done, that you can go back and you can listen to this again. But get out a pen right now, and I'm stalling for time a little bit, so you get a pen and a piece of paper. So as you listen, I'm going to give you a list of the most common core wounds that people have and how you can tell which one is yours. And it's a short, it's not a very long list. How you can tell which one is yours is the, you identify the chronic feeling of something that you don't like about yourself. Like, you'll know it when you hear it. You know, I'm not good enough, was the person who submitted the question, is that chronic feeling, I'm not good enough, that just is chronic and keeps coming back, and that's something that you don't like about yourself, that you have that thought. And the second way you can tell which one is yours is it's the one you most don't want to be. The one that's like, oh God, not that one. All right. So these are primary core wounds, and pay attention which one is yours. And you may come up with two or three. One may be just screaming at you, but let's go through them. The first one is I'm too much. Like, okay, I enter the room and people are annoyed. Another one is I am not good. Like, I'm a bad person. I'm not a good person. Another one is, I am not enough. Person who submitted this question, that's yours. And when people identify with that as their core wound, often they try to show or prove that they are enough. And that they spend their whole lives trying to show or prove that they are enough to not just other people, but themselves. Next one, I don't belong. Like you're at a party, you feel like the odd man out, you don't fit in. Next one, I'm a burden. I'm a pain in the ass. I'm afraid of asking for help because I don't want to burden anyone. Next, I'm not lovable. Now, if this is your core wound, then oftentimes it comes or gets exacerbated maybe, because I actually think that you're born with these. But if your parents didn't love you and you have grown up feeling like you're not lovable, oftentimes people will become sexually promiscuous in order to get the love that they feel that they need. Like they become just so hungry to just feel lovable, or they become obsessed with looks because then they get a lot of attention and it'll make them feel lovable. Next one, I'm not worthy. Like I don't deserve money. I don't deserve a partner. There's two left. I can't take care of myself. And maybe Liz Andrew, this is his core wound. This is really easy to see in other people because they're always asking for love and support. Last one, I don't have what I need. And this shows up as like, I need to have XYZ, or I need something to change before I can accomplish my goals. Like I need to have money, or I need to have an apartment, or I need to have a partner, or I need to have a baby, or like, I don't have what I need. Has everybody been able to kind of generally identify ones that they resonate with? And if not, you know, we can go over them again, or what do you want to do? See if there's anything, maybe put something in the chat room. Bravo. All good. Maybe raise your hand if you don't feel like any of these resonate with you. You know, I'll go over the basics of core wound. Now, like core values, you're born with them. You're born with a core wound. It's just a part of your life. And that's what's so profound about this. The basics of core wound, first of all, it's really easy to see other people's core wound. It's hard to see it in yourself. If you do see it, this is a second kind of basic understanding of core values. If you do see it, you will have the thought that it doesn't seem to fit with who you really are. Like you'll ask yourself, like, is this really who I am? This is ridiculous. Where does this come from? This is stupid. This is not who I am. And your friends will say it too. This doesn't fit. You're so strong. Like you are enough, right? So you see it. If other people see it, you will have that question. Is this really who I am? And there'll be a lot of resistance to it and wanting to get rid of it, which is shows up in, of course, in the question. The third basic understanding that you can have about core wound is that it gets dangerous when it goes unconscious. You know, when your core wound is unconscious and you get triggered, and usually you get triggered because your core value is threatened, you're going to start acting really weird. And like I talked about in the first question with the rage, you're going to start acting weird and you're going to trigger the core wound in other people. So Liz, like you're going to have your core values and your core wound trigger when your husband and his ex-wife start to coddle Andrew, and you know, they're not instilling industriousness and confidence. And that kind of thing is going to trigger your core wound, which will cause you to act out and start acting weird. And then you're going to trigger the core wound in Andrew, your husband, and their ex-wife. And next thing you know, you guys go round and round. And it's like, and core wound is in many ways another name, for those of you that have worked with me privately or in a, you know, like a ski camp, I call it a false self. I think that this is a more pinpointed version of false self. So whenever you're fighting with another person, it's false self pitted against false self. Now I'm calling it core wound pitted against core wound, which both gets triggered because your core values are threatened. So what do you do about it? You know, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. I'm not lovable. I'm not lovable. I'm not a good person. I'm not a good person. How do you get rid of it is probably the bigger question. And that's actually what the question that was submitted. And she wrote, I try to work through it, but the thoughts will not stop. It is exhausting. Well, the fourth, and this is, you're not going to like this, the fourth kind of basic understanding about core wound is that the core, your core wound does not want to be healed. It's like a voice. You guys have done enough voice dialogue with me. I know, Jeff, you haven't, but just bear with me. Can a voice, can a part of you, can one of the 10,000 voices ever be healed or gotten rid of? No, we know that. We can't get rid of it. It's a lot of work to try to get rid of it, to get rid of a voice or to heal it. Or to, you know, when I say heal, I mean to try to change the nature of it. Like, is fear ever going to be healed and not be afraid anymore? No, fear's job is to be afraid. You can put a lot of work into it and may think that you've succeeded, but the second you go unconscious again, which you will, and you stop working your butt off, that core wound will come back every time. So instead, what I suggest that you learn is this. Whatever yours is, start by knowing that you can't get rid of it. You just can't get rid of it. Just land there. It's never going to go away. And from there, it's the dance of remembering that you can't get rid of it, and then forgetting that you can't get rid of it, and then remembering that you can't get rid of it, and then forgetting. And the more that you really let this land, that you can't ever get rid of it. And I know that this is not the answer that you're looking for, whoever, you know, who you are, ask this question. But just feel the relief of realizing that you now know that you can't get rid of it. And once you have that realization, then the four-step art of fear method can take you in another direction from resistance or trying to get rid of it or trying to change it or trying to heal it. But it's not going to heal. I'm not going to get rid of it. Can you then go up the ladder from resistance to it, it's my word, to acceptance of it? Keep up the four steps and then you go to embracing it. And then eventually you get to intimacy with it. That's why I love the four steps so much, because it doesn't matter what it is. It could be fear, or it could be the thought of I'm not lovable or I'm not enough. You keep doing the four steps. It takes you on that journey up the ladder till eventually you get to a state of intimacy with any of these voices. But instead of doing the four steps again, let's explore this further in other ways. Who wants to be in the hot seat? Oh, well, actually, you know, let's not put anybody in the hot seat. I think that this is valuable for everyone, and I don't want to put somebody on the spot because I think it might take away from their experience. So even if you're not entirely sure what your core wound is, pick one that really strikes you the most, the one that you hate, like the one on the page that you're like, there's no way, that's not it. I originally thought that mine was, I'm not lovable. And I very quickly realized that, and it was a shock, that mine is, I'm not a good person. And it's like, I say that to you guys and you probably look at me and you're like, that's ridiculous. You're such a good person, Kristen. But that's what mine is. I'm not a good person. And so people who are very clever, who are narcissists, will always figure that out. And they will steer their criticisms towards me to suggest that I'm not a good person. You know, like Kristen, you're just manipulating people. You know, you have ill intention. You're trying to take advantage of people. And when somebody criticizes me for that or says things like that, gaslighting or not, boy, it triggers me like you cannot even believe, because I have spent my whole life trying to be a good person. And the reason why is because my core wound is I'm a bad person. Interesting. So take whatever yours is, which may be slightly different than the first one you thought. And let's just go to the fourth step of the Art of Fear method. And I want you to have intimacy with it right now. As best you can. Let's just start with intimacy as best you can. And maybe to get there, just recognize the truth in that sentence. Like the truth of, yes, you are not enough. You're not enough. And the truth of, yes, I'm not a good person. Sometimes I'm not. And sometimes you are not enough. So I'm speaking to the person who asked this question anonymously. You know who you are. So just find the truth in that. I'm not enough. Now, I had a client a few years back whose core wound was this. This is before I knew about core wounds. And we did a whole session on it. And he felt like he had to gain love from his children by giving them money. So we did the voice dialogue, the one who seeks love by giving money. And then we did the one who seeks love based on how I act, like acts of service, hugs, you know, compliments, things like that. And then we did the voice of the one who seeks love just for being who I am as a person. You know, like deserves love just by being, just by waking up and doing nothing that day. And it was such a shock to realize that nobody gets love that way. You know, like just by being, you deserve love. Nobody gets love or money or satisfaction just by existing, except for maybe children, maybe only special needs children. You know, we all expect our children to at least do the dishes at some point, right? If not, we get mad and withhold love, like special needs children. Like I think of the baby that was born without a brain that's still alive, you know? They get love just because, but pretty much nobody else does. It's like you have to do, you have to be, you have to contribute something, you know? So it's true. You alone are never enough. But can you find the truth in that? And I could pick apart the truth in me being a bad person. Yeah, I could find evidence to support that I'm a bad person all day long. And this is just kind of a start of accepting this, you know? Back to you are never enough, like no one is ever enough. Now, it's the truth. You're not enough. Just you sitting there are not enough. But is it the whole truth? Or is it your whole truth? Does your core wound, ask yourself, all of you, make up your entire being? And the answer is no. It is one voice of 10,000, but it's a very strong voice. Very strong. Just like your core values are very strong. Like there's just certain voices that are just going to ring louder for you than others. But back to noun versus adjective, it will make up your entire being. Here's where we tip over the edge. Really listen to this. It will make up your entire being and become your whole truth if you fight or resist it. If you kink the hose and try to get rid of it, whatever you resist persists. Whatever you try to control, it's like you give it magical powers and it just controls you right back. It doesn't even try, it succeeds. So in our time together that we have left, let's try an abbreviated version of the four steps. So each of you, I want you to consider your core wound. I'm going to say them again. And if, you know, you've been listening, but you haven't really identified yours, this is one last chance. I'm too much. I'm not good. Like I'm a bad person. I am not enough. I don't belong. I'm a burden. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. I can't take care of myself. I don't have what I need. Whatever yours is, first I want you to sit with the thought that I want it to go away. Just spend 15 seconds just having the thought, I want it to go away. Or I wish it weren't so. I'm gonna get rid of this. There's something wrong with me that I feel that there's something wrong with me. Now for the next 15 seconds, notice how you feel, what that's like, what it's like that could become the whole centerpiece for your life. Now instead, sit with the thought that this is normal and natural. It's normal and natural to feel like there's something wrong with me. It's normal and natural to feel like I'm a bad person. Because it's my core wound. I was born with this. It's still painful. But, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like, you don't have to have that feeling that there's something wrong with you, that there's something wrong with you. You can have the feeling like, yeah, this is just who I am. I'm always going to feel that there's something wrong with me. It's like you've, instead of two burdens, you only have one. Now, one last thing that we're going to sit with before we say goodbye. I saw this comic recently. It was aliens have landed a spaceship and they'd gotten out and they're looking at Jesus on the cross. And I wrote it down because I wanted to get it just right. And the aliens were saying, one alien was saying to the other, you know what we need to do? We need to get the fuck out of here. That's what we need to do. And I love that comic because it's like, we're kind of fucked up, right? I mean, we hang people on crosses and I mean, we're getting better. We don't do that anymore, but we're not fully formed. We're not that far off from animals and we suffer. Really let that sink in. We suffer, you suffer, we all suffer, and that's normal. And you are born with a wound that can never heal. I mean, several wounds, because you have several core values, and there's a wound tied with all of them, but one core wound in particular. And just the 15 seconds, this last sit, sit with, there is something wrong with me in that I'm human. I'm part of this vast network of 8 billion people today, but I'm also, you know, every human that's ever lived is in me. You know, I've been part of a group of people that put Jesus on the cross. Just to name one thing. Any questions? I'm hoping that this is a beautiful realization, not a depressing one. It's like as Zen students, our job is to just become one with being a human fucking being. Wounds and all, projections and all, rage, repression, resistance, turning a noun into an adjective. Any questions? And if there are none, I want to read actually a story that I could probably tell without reading it, but I, the person that wrote this just did such a good job. One evening, Kent returned to his cave after gathering firewood, only to find it filled with demons. They were cooking his food, reading his books, sleeping in his bed. They had taken over the joint. He knew about selflessness, compassion, and gratitude, but he didn't know how to get these guys out of the cave. At first, he taught them to be the Dharma. He sat on a seat that was higher than they were and said things to them about how we are all one. He talked about all the wonderful things he'd learned, but nothing happened. The demons were still there. Then he lost his patience and got angry and ran at them. They just laughed at him. Finally, he gave up and just sat down on the floor, saying, "I'm not going away, and it looks like you're not either. So let's just live here together." At that point, all of them left, except one. Kent said, "Oh, this one is particularly vicious." This is what we see as our core wound. He didn't know what to do, so he surrendered himself even further. He walked over and put himself right into the mouth of the demon and said, "Just eat me up if you want to." Then that demon left as well. Maybe this is the journey of our lives, to just put ourselves right into the head of our core wound. Hard to do. I'll give it a try. Let me know how it goes. With that, I bow to you. Thank you for the wonderful questions. I can't wait to get more for next month. Hint, hint. And I'll talk to you in a month.